everybody. I'm your host, William Del Pilar, a conservative Latino, diving into the wild intersections that make headlines explode. Welcome to Points on the Board, where sports slam into culture and politics for the ultimate showdown. Today, we're unpacking racist breeding rants from an NFL dad's playbook, WNBA drama, blending eye pokes with media bias accusations, a Jaguars embezzlement scandal fueling gambling reform debates, Teddy Bridgewater's generous suspension sparking equity fights, and Trump dance shimmying into video games for gamer outrage. So strap on your leather helmets, people, and let's score some points. But before we begin, don't forget to bookmark grumblingsmedia.com and follow us on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, eSpotify under the handle Grumblings Media. So let's get right into it. This first segment is called Daddy's Dubious DNA Doctrine. St. Brown Sr. Spouts Racist Breeding Baloney on Athlete Genes. Let's give a little kudos here. I heard this or saw it on X and then saw Outkick had a pretty good synopsis between that and AI. I was able to really dig into it. But when I actually saw it, I was like, whoa. So what's the overview here? John Brown, father of NFL wide receivers, Amon-Ra St. Brown with the Lions. And I always screw this up, but Equanimeous St. Brown with the Saints. Made racially charged remarks about breeding superior athletes by mixing black and white genes. Or that's how it started, but not where it ended. The comments were actually originally made on a 2024 podcast episode, but they resurfaced just this past week, prompting widespread backlash. Now, Brown implied that interracial mixing beyond one generation weakens black genetic gold, and described his sons as proof of strategic racial pairing. Shades of Martina Navratilova. She once said that if her and Michael Jordan had kids, it'd be a superior genetic kid. And she wasn't saying it like that's what she wanted, but she was just talking about two great athletes of their time. Now, there hasn't been much public response from his sons that they've issued, though during the podcast, they laughed along. So what are the key points here? Well, Brown credited his white German wife's genes for his son's success. And he warned Amon-Ra about further interracial mixing with his fiance, Brooklyn, calling their potential child half and half with a chance. So obviously a clip like that's going to go viral, went viral over X, TikTok. I mean, you name it, it went viral. I imagine Kick and some of the other places as well. And media outlets like Yahoo and The Root, a very far left bigoted site, drew condemnation for eugenics undertones and anti-white rhetoric. I can see that for once we agree. Now, some fans have called on the NFL to address racism and family entourage statements, citing the league's diversity initiatives. Look, this was inevitable. What I always told people, it's easy to hate on the dominant culture in America. That's white or Anglo culture. But eventually, all this nonsense would, especially with social media, would expose the black hypocrisy, the Latino hypocrisy, Asian hypocrisy. Why? Because there's racism and bigotry in every culture. There's bigotry in every religion. So this doesn't shock me. You know, so Brown has a history of bodybuilding and genetics talk. And I guess this shows a pattern of what you would call racial essentialism, and it's disguised as athletic strategy. Brown said, quote, "I believe in breeding. I'm black. His mom is white. If I'm black, I got the black gold running through my veins," unquote. He's not talking about oil. He warned, quote, "You can't keep cutting it. You're going to weaken it," unquote. And that he was referring to repeated interracial reproduction. Now, Brown generalized about selecting brothers for producing athletic children, explicitly promoting racial selective reproduction, obviously for performance. Now, the comments implied racial purity for physical superiority, praising limited mixing while discouraging ongoing interracial lineage. So in other words, doing it once is fine. Doing it more than once, no, no, no. So, we're looking at eugenics, racism, a dangerous ideology. Now, from a historical perspective, when African Americans were slaves, they had what you would call a breeding legacy, because historically, it's historically true that enslaved Africans were paired based on physical traits to increase labor output. And that's kind of what he's talking about here. I'm just telling you the history. I'm not inferring anything. But these forced reproductive practices created a lasting stereotype, when obviously Brown believes in that, including the myth of genetic athletic superiority based on race. I don't know, Larry Bird, Cooper Flagg, you're seeing more and more whites in the NBA. You're seeing more blacks at quarterback. You're seeing whites at cornerback, receiver, you know. So over time, things changed from beginning. At one time, there were Jewish boxers. Now, I don't think you can find a Jewish boxer. I'm being a bit sarcastic because I don't know. But my point is, times change. But selective breeding does not equal great athletes. Training, opportunity, education, and character matter far more than skin color or genetic theory. Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, they were the arguably, they may not have been the most talented, but they were the hardest working and became one of the best at their game. I mean, Michael Jordan is light years ahead of Kobe, but he is the gold bearer. Martina Navratilova and Steffi Graf, I would take them any day of the week before one of the Serena sisters. I don't know if they'd win, but they match up pretty well. They would all beat up on Chris Everett. But you see my point, you know, quarterbacks, Dan Fouts, Johnny Unitas, Patrick Mahomes, there's somebody who is half and half. So it's not selective breeding as Brown talks about as much as all these external factors. So, for example, why aren't there many great black golfers? Well, because there's not a lot of golf courses in the inner city. That's just a sad, ugly truth. A friend of mine was going to do a paper on this topic itself, talking about external factors, going back to slavery. He was Latino, and his professor refused to let him do it. He said, I'll fail you if you do that. I don't want to go into that territory, you know. But Brown's claims ignore how actual success is built. And what he does is he reduces the human race to simply breeding stock for superiority. Shades of Hitler. Yeah. And it does mirror eugenic rhetoric, the same ideology used by Hitler's regime to justify racial purity, forced sterilization, and genocide. When you frame reproduction around race and performance, it's no longer sport. It's political extremism. And this kind of thinking doesn't just lead to awkward family dynamics. It lays a foundation for division, conflict, and social violence that could end up not in race wars, but in countries. Could you imagine Africa, Europe, the Middle East? Wars across nations. And it's not who is the physical specimen, who has the most people, and who has the bigger guns. And in that sense, there's a handful of countries that would dominate. Because if you guys start going the way of genocide, the U.S. would be on top if we didn't care. We are the most compassionate country in the world, period. So just think about that. You know, so this kind of thinking, you know, it's the belief in genetic superiority fuels war, not unity. We've seen this before in history, and we should reject it outright. Brown's comments suggest a dominance complex over his white wife and his son's fiance. It's indicative of a negative stereotype in terms of a patriarchal racial hierarchy, where the man sees himself as superior, both physically, which is the case most, if not all the time, and intellectually, which is not the case a lot of the time. And that dynamic is unhealthy, and it's disturbingly common in cross-cultural relationships, including military families. I come from a military family. I have seen that, sadly. And it's, well, I'll just leave it at that. Now, the silence from the players and league only helps normalize this type of rhetoric. If this was white, it'd be done. Person would be suspended. The kids would be talking to. They'd be forced to apologize. but it doesn't happen when it's a black or a Latino or an Asian. Racism is racism. When high-profile families push racist ideologies unchecked, it's undermining not just the NFL's image, but American image and what we stand for. And so, and for the NFL, its supposed commitment to diversity and inclusion. Beliefs like Brown spit in the face of national values and historical lessons. Genetics doesn't determine greatness. Freedom, opportunity, and effort do. Brown's commentary is a textbook example of taking fragments of history and science and turning them into racially charged worldview wrapped in legacy building. What he overlooks, and what I and everyone should never forget, is the long arc of where that mindset leads. Superiority complexes, fractured relationships, racial resentment, and ultimately justification for bigotry, racism, and eventual war. Never forget Adolf Hitler and what almost happened. All right, let's move on to my next segment, the WNBA iPoke soap opera, Clark Shiner, Carrington's Fury, and Brennan's defamatory tell-all. Let's give some kudos here to CNN. Oh, yes, CNN. That's where I initially got the story. So I like to give credit where I discovered the story, but at the end of the day, I do a lot of research through other articles, and I use AI to formulate my thoughts to double and triple check. You got to do that when you use AI too, though. But on July 6th, last week, journalist Christine Brennan released an excerpt from her book, On Her Game, recounting the 2024 WNBA playoff incident. The book's called On Her Game. And she's recounting that. And I remember this. During game one of the Fever Sun series, and that was September of last year, DeJoni Carrington, she's of the Connecticut Suns, poked Caitlin Clark of the Fever in the eye while defending her. Now, Brennan later asked Carrington about the play, and that prompted backlash from players and the WNBPA. Now, the WNBPA is a very bigoted, and at times, to me, a racist organization. The players themselves have shown over and over via video their own comments that they are bigoted and racist as well. A lot of them are. Now, they accuse Brennan of fueling hate because she asked a simple question. Right now, the league is having a war within itself and the public over race and sexuality. Monica McNutt said that this league, the WNBA, was created by black women and lesbians and should remain queer. She alluded to that. She didn't directly say it, but when she was doing her analysis, that's pretty much what she was saying. So Brennan's question about poking Caitlin Clark in the eye, it led to a confrontation with Carrington's then teammate, DeWanna Bonner. And she accused Brennan of disrespecting Carrington. These are women who've never had any attention given to them. Now they're asked questions. They don't know how to react. And they act like thugs. That's right. I said thugs. I hate it when people go, how dare you, William? That's racist. No, you call any bad person a thug. Anybody who acts like an idiot, like a 12-year-old petulant child, a thug. I've been using that term since I was a kid. I've had it used on me. I've had it used on others. Our gang was mixed. We've been called thugs. We really weren't. But Carrington also confronted Brennan over alleged negative comments about her romantic partner, Nalisa Smith, her lover, lesbian. And that's fine, but just the irony, you know, of Monica McNutt's words. The league is built on lesbians and blacks, you know. The league should be black and queer is a term I saw. Yeah, but, and she was on the Fever, Nalisa Smith, and she claimed Brennan called Smith a bad teammate. Well, I called her a bad teammate. You have to protect your teammate. I don't care if that's your girlfriend. If that's your girlfriend and you're not going to protect your own teammate because your girlfriend's on the other team, we got problems there, honey. So yeah, I would have called her a bad teammate. Now, Brennan and two other reporters present denied the accusation, and I believe them. Carrington's been proven to be a liar when it comes to these type of issues. At least that's how I've interpreted when I've seen this happen over and over and over with not only her, but other WNBA players. So the WNBPA issued a statement condemning Brennan's approach, accusing her of baiting divisive narratives and amplifying racist, homophobic, and misogynistic vitriol. And the WNBPA is projecting, because that's what those players who are racist and bigoted and happen to be black and lesbian, that's what they do. At least in my opinion. Carrington responded on X, calling the excerpt defamation of character and hinting at legal action. Please, please, ain't going to be any legal action, and I'll tell you why in a second. So the eye poke occurred during a defensive play, for those wondering, and both Carrington and Clark publicly stated it was unintentional. It doesn't matter. You know, Clark has bent the knee, but she is taking a beating. They don't like her. They mistreat her. 17 flagrant fouls in her rookie season. I forget the current ESPN announcer who's taking, Rebecca Lobo, taking a lot of flack. She got hammered the other day because she pointed out like 5 or 6 fouls within a 10-second period that wasn't called on Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark needs to take a stand, but she's too much of a coward to not. And that's just how I view it. I don't support the league at all. I talk about it because it's so racist, so bigoted, and for us to come together as Americans, that has to end. And until we look in the mirror, and I tell this to my Latino relatives who are obviously darker skinned than I am. Yeah, you got to look in the mirror. You just can't be hammering whites. Oh, you're sticking up for them because you look like one. No, I stuck up for your sorry self when they make comments about Latinos. But until we come together and understand racism is in every culture, we'll never be a country united. And that's what the Democrats are doing. They are separating us with this tribalism. And notice how Carrington immediately played the victim. The WNBPA playing the victim when they are the actual culprits. Now, to make it worse, Carrington and teammate Marina Mabry were laughing after she poked her in the eye. They were mocking Clark. There is no some interpreting. They were mocking Clark and they were having fun. That happened when I forget the Chicago Sky player who flagrantly fouled Clark during the rookie season and Angel Reese. Yeah, why? Because Angel Reese Angel Reese sucks. You know, she calls herself rebound, meaning she gets like 40% or 30% of her rebounds are her own. It's incredible on the offensive side of the board. So Brennan was asked about this to give Carrington the chance to clarify. And she didn't. But in the post-interview, Bonner confronted Brennan, repeating accusations of disrespect. I said that earlier, but it bears saying again. Now, the next day after that whole incident, Carrington accused Brennan and two other reporters of speaking negatively about Smith. It's like they want to control the narrative, so they don't want to let a reporter do their job. The hypocrisy of the left. They, black Americans, went through this for 150 years. With the media not reporting the truth and creating a narrative. And here we go. Carrington's like, you better create the narrative that favors me because I'm a black racist who's a lesbian. And you can't be telling the truth about me. That's my opinion. That's how I see it based on what she said, how they laughed. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to see this. But what does the WNBPA do? They accuse Brennan of unethical journalism and call for her credentials to be revoked. Look, I've been covering sports and I've been part of the media since 1997. I've worked with the media since 1990. I was an interpreter overseas dealing with the media in the 80s. I know what the hell I'm talking about. And luckily, the USA Today defended Brennan, citing her longstanding rep and commitment to journalistic standards. So this controversy has fueled broader debates on media bias, diversity, and equity in women's sports. That's what they want you to think. No, it's fueled debates because the cat's out of the bag, and we're seeing this bigotry, this racism, this hate towards anything Anglo in the WNBA by many, many, not all, but many black players. And then they're talking about mental pressures on athletes. The only mental pressure is they're jealous and envious of Caitlin Clark. And look at ways to take her out when they play her. They're envious because she is the league. When she doesn't play, the ratings drop. When she doesn't play, they don't sell out stadiums. She was a top vote getter, and yet the players put her as the ninth best point guard in the league. I think it's point guard. It's terrible, terrible. Caitlin Clark has brought record-breaking viewership, sold out arenas, and brought mainstream attention to the WNBA. So instead of embracing that, many players, especially the black LGBTQ, have responded with hate and bigotry, and they've exposed their racism. Her whiteness, popularity, and straight identity have made her a target. And this is a league that struggles to handle success from outside its preferred narrative. In other words, they want to keep it as it is. I remember Brittany Griner saying, why are there so many people? Why are they doing this? Why did, you know, it's like, hey, you moron. Ugh. So, again, let's go to Monica McNutt. She alluded to Clark's appeal being tied to her being a white girl from Middle America. Very racist. So what about Tiger's popularity with blacks? What about Warren Moon's popularity with blacks? Steve McNair's with blacks? Because they're not in a position that was traditionally seen as from that culture. So it's called homophily. Look it up. Homophily. For you slow MFers out there. It's natural. It's part of human nature. But Monica McNutt said it in a racist way. And honestly, ESPN, it's all black and lesbians, your coverage in the analysts. How about getting a white male in there, huh? Yeah, I'll be talking about diversity, bringing women into men's sports. But can't have a man talking about the WNBA as your analyst. You have racist African-American women. Come on, man. So all this does is reinforce the idea that Clark's rise is somehow unfair or unearned, which is a complete lie. Sports is meritocracy-based, and that's what they hate. It's not that she's been given anything. She's earned it, and she's better than them. Plenty of black male NBA players have gone, man, they just don't like that little white girl better than them, being better than them. Magic and Larry Bird saved the NBA, and all the players love them for that. Now, they may not have liked Larry on the court, but not because he was white, because he was one of the biggest trash talkers around. The NBA's embracing Cooper Flagg because they're like, that's a meal ticket. This kid's going to bring in some ratings. They don't care. They get their guarantee checks. And some other analysts at ESPN have accused the Fever fans of racism. Yet three separate investigations found no evidence. There were lies. That's a pattern that's consistent with Wilfred Riley in his book that talks about race hoaxes. Hate crime hoax. How the left is selling a fake race war. He's black. Over 400 cases of these documents. And that's what we're seeing with Angel Reese and others in the WNBA. But they refuse, the WNBA refuses to investigate any hate crime actions towards Clark. Things that make you go, So when Christine Brennan asked Johnny Carrington about the eye poke, she was met with threats of lawsuits and accusations of racism and homophobia. They were projecting. They were putting their hate, bigotry, and racism towards her to deflect and change the subject. The WNBPA played along, fueling the hate, despite looking in the mirror that they represent hate, bigotry, and racism. Brennan was offering Carrington a chance to clarify. This shows the league's intolerance for scrutiny, especially when it involves Clark. The WNBA is protecting racism, bigotry, and hate, and that needs a change. Despite leading in stats, fan votes, and impact, again, I said it earlier, let me reiterate, Clark was ranked ninth among guards by her peers. That's not analysis. That's petty, bigoted envy. Even Nancy Lieberman, Basketball Hall of Famer, WNBA pioneer, and former NBA, not WNBA, NBA assistant coach, called out the petty behavior and urged players to stop hating and start supporting the league's growth. What I want to see Caitlin Clark do, and I think she will after a couple of years, it's going to wear on her. Some European league is going to offer her $20 million a year. She's going to fly. And you're going to watch. You're going to see that league collapse. Now, these legal threats by Carrington, they're hollow. Yeah, she's going to sue Brennan for defamation. It's not going to go anywhere. a lawsuit would trigger discovery, forcing the USA Today and Brennan to start subpoenaing every player. And their insiders will talk, oh, yeah, this player said this, this player said that. And these are inexperienced women who are used to being bigoted and racist without anybody pushing back and making them stand for, meaning making them call them out and making them, what's the word I'm looking for here? What I'm trying to say is they would, and during discovery, they're not forcing somebody challenging them, triggering them, forcing them. And they're going to stumble into the truth out of anger. So it's not something their side wants. So that's going to go nowhere. So what's it really about? It's not about fairness or inclusion. It's about gatekeeping. Clark's rise is exposing deep fractures in the WNBA, and the backlash proves just how resistant parts of the league are to real growth. And it's pathetic. All right, let's move on to something that's not dear to my heart, but something that I dealt with from day one when I helped pioneer and commercialize the fantasy sports industry. The Jaguars' sticky-fingered finance whiz, from virtual credit shenanigans to extra jail time jackpot. This comes from the USA Today's where I first saw the article. It's an ex-Jaguars employee is hit with 6 new felony charges for grand theft. This deals with gambling. Former Jaguars finance manager Amit Patel, he's already serving a 6.5-year federal sentence for embezzling over $22 million, was hit with 6 new felony grand theft charges. This is in Florida. This was just a few days ago. And these state charges could add significant prison time. Patel's only 32. He was transferred to Duval County Jail. I used to live in Duval County. To face 2 second-degree felonies, which is up to 15 years each. Some reports when I was doing my research said first degree. But it's probably a combination of both. So 2 second-degree felonies up to 15 years each and 4 third-degree felonies up to 5 years each. So, and these charges build on the December 2023 guilty plea for wire fraud and illegal transactions. And that included a $21 million restitution order. He's also involved in a $250 million civil suit against FanDuel, alleging they exploited his gambling addiction. I believe that, and I don't believe that. I believe that because FanDuel probably did, but they probably didn't realize you're dealing with an addict. And he's also facing the Jaguars' $67 million lawsuit under Florida's triple damages statute. They're not going to get a dime of that, and they know it. So on July 9th, Florida authorities formally charged him treating each unauthorized transfer over $100,000 as a separate count of grand theft. And just to reiterate, he embezzled about $22.2 million between 2019 and 2023 using the team's virtual credit card. Or it's a credit card program, and he fabricated charges and falsified accounting files. He transferred $20 million to FanDuel and $1 million to DraftKings, losing nearly all of it to gambling. I would imagine FanDuel's going to give that money back. I mean, they're going to want to avoid any incident that looks bad on them, especially with California coming out of saying DFS is gambling. And my friends, I help pioneer and commercialize that. I know all these games inside and out, and DFS is gambling. There are other additional purchases, a Patek Philippe Nautilus watch, they're expensive. A Pontevedra Beach condo, ooh, that's super expensive. A Tesla, expensive. And sports memorabilia like Tiger Woods' 1996 U.S. amateur putter. That guy was living large. So in December 2023, he pled guilty to wire fraud and illegal monetary transactions. That's where he got his 6.5-year federal sentence. And he was ordered to pay $21 million in restitution. So just a couple of days ago, Florida filed those 6 new state felony charges. And then, again, he has his lawsuit against FanDuel. And then the Jaguars are suing him. So there's a lot going on. But this scandal intersects politics and sports through ongoing debate over legalized betting regulations. Think about that. This story has it all. And I didn't mention this, but the Jaguars officially fired him in February of 2023. So, my issues with legalized gambling. See, I was against DFS. I do view gambling as, I don't gamble. I have an addictive personality, so I just don't gamble. fantasy sports is not gambling. You know, it's not. It's a game of skill. DFS is gambling. When you got to put money down and they do parlays instead of teams, they do players, it's gambling. The terminology is the same. I was at an event during one of the trade seminars when the executive director for the trade association, back then it was called the Fantasy Sports Trade Association, said, y'all got to watch what you say. You can't be using this term. We can't let Pandora out of the box or the cat out of the bag. He goes, once it's legalized, then nobody cares. But until that happens, you have to be careful with the terms you use. Why? Because it was gambling. Gambling terms fit. If it walks like a duck, looks like a duck, it's a duck. Gambling. And my issue with this is with legalized gambling, what's the national fallout? Bankruptcy risk has surged about 30% in states with legalized online sports betting, especially among low-income households. Credit scores dropped nearly 1% on average post-legalization, with spikes in debt, delinquency, and overdrafts. Gambling addiction-related help searches rose 23%, over 7 million online queries since 2018. And domestic violence increased by 9% in states with legal sports betting.
Shut up, woman. Don't be telling me what to do. Bah, 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 bah.
Especially after major game losses. You know, people don't realize the biggest day of domestic violence is after the Super Bowl. Sad but true. Sad but true. All right, let's move on. Let's move on to Teddy's Wallet Whammy. Ex-NFL star benched for being too generous to inner city kids. Teddy Bridgewater, he was suspended from high school coaching for spending nearly $100,000 on his players. I saw this online, then I saw an article on OutKick. So, obviously, Teddy Bridgewater is a former NFL quarterback, underachieved. But in high school, he led Miami Northwestern High School to the 2024 Class 3A state title as their coach in his debut coaching season. He was suspended for providing over $100,000 in impermissible benefits. That included meals, apparel, recovery services, transportation, and field trips, all paid from his own pocket. So what was the spending breakdown? About $2,200 per week for meals, $1,300 a week for recovery trucks, $700 a week for Uber rides, $14,000 for training camp, $9,500 for uniforms, and $300 a week for field paint. Now, Bridgewater self-reported these expenses. No, I mean, he did it probably on the advice of his lawyer. He did it about a week ago now, actually, on a Facebook post, then confirmed his suspension today, I think. And he's vowing to continue supporting his team from the sidelines. They're going to ask him don't show up at all, just like they do to a parent who's caused issues. And he's asking for community donations to avoid future violations. That's not going to happen. And personally funding the team again, from him personally funding the team again. So the FHSAA is reviewing the case, though no formal investigation is underway. So this situation mirrors the First Academy's 2024 violation, where similar benefits triggered a $36,000 fine, a playoff ban, and forfeited wins despite no direct recruitment. I expect something similar to happen, unless they play the race card. Now, Bridgewater's employment status, he says, is disputed. He claims he's not a formal school employee, and he says that complicates the legitimacy of the suspension. No, it doesn't. They just do it like a parent. Get out of here. There are a lot of parents that volunteer, and the coaches accept them because they need the work. You know, got to get this player, help out with this, make sure the gym's, you know, the field, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, get out of here, Teddy. Now, they don't want to do that, but that's how they'll treat it. His school was a predominantly black inner city school where 75% of students are economically disadvantaged. It doesn't matter. His actions violated FHSAA Policy 36, which bars any benefit that may create recruiting advantages regardless of intent. Now, a lot of his supporters go, well, this is about equity, funding disparities, and et cetera, et cetera. And alumni involvement in public school athletics. Well, equity is a smokescreen. A millionaire coach spending $100,000 gives any school, black, white, or Latino, or Asian, of course, I don't know, but a massive advantage. And supporting only black-owned businesses, Teddy, that's kind of racist there. There's all kinds of restaurants you could have gotten meals from. Black, Latino, Asian, Anglo, Korean. There's a lot of Korean in those areas. That's not equity, Teddy. That's exclusion. See, to me, that's one of the views of racism. When an Anglo goes, oh, I'm only going to go to Anglo restaurants. I'm like, that's pretty racist. There's a lot of great Latino food, a lot of great Indian food, Chinese food we all love. I grew up in the South, a lot of great black, I don't want to say they're black foods as much as traditional dishes made by both black and white country folk. God, I love country food. I remember this one lady, she was black, Big Mama. I mean, I'd never say her face. Oh, boy, because she cooked for us all the time. We loved her to death. God bless her. Rest in peace, Mama-san. Anyway, so supporting only black-owned businesses while intentional ignores working-class families of all races, I say. That's my take. And although no recruiting was cited, the results mimic recruiting because elite perks attract talent. Families will move or they'll lie about where they live to gain access. It's common. That happens all the time, especially in Texas. And if this is allowed, you're going to get wealthy alumni that will privately fund programs, tilting the competition and crippling districts without those deep pockets. That's why they have these rules. And how do they counter that? They have boosters, and they exist to build programs. You know, selling the cookies, the shirts, the all kinds of sales to help raise money. And this is common amongst all public school systems. The sports are the ones who always get their money stripped, regardless. And you always see it in middle class to poor. You always see it there. So it's not just poor, it's middle class. Why? Because they've mismanaged money or they don't have enough money. So Bridgewater solo funding bypassed the community checks and gave his team elite treatment. So using equity to justify this isn't inclusion. It's identity-based favoritism. And it harms working class schools of all races and poverty schools of all races. What, you don't think the barrios don't have poverty-stricken schools? Get the hell out of here. I'm about equality. I've never been about this favoritism here. I'm like, if you get help, it's based off where you are financially. Not what color your skin is. Because I know a lot of poor Latinos and a lot of poor whites and a lot of poor blacks growing up or having moved to the South. So, and since my family's so diverse, that's why I've looked at it that way. I'll never buy into Latinos should get more than this poor group. Blacks should get more than this poor group. That's not equality. That's equity that I call racism. All right, my friends. Let's close out with virtual victory shimmy, Trump's iconic boogie. The Trump dance sneaks into college football game, triggering gamer tantrums. I just did a short on this. It'll be out in a couple of days. Look for it. But I saw this one online a few days ago, and Outkick did a story on it too. But the overview here is I got my little critter here with me. Y'all can't see. So a player of EA Sports College Football 26 spotted Penn State wide receiver Tysier Denmark performing the Trump dance, mimicking Donald Trump's YMCA rally groove during the touchdown celebration. In essence, he saw the Trump dance, whoo, a player. So early access footage from a few days ago sparked the viral clips and polarized the debate online. So this release gained cultural traction, and while it's not related to an election cycle, Trump's political and sports presence remains active, meaning they still love him in the sports world. That came out as we were coming to election day. All these players, black and white, were starting to do the Trump dance. You know, let me show y'all what's bugging me here. This is bugging me. My little baby girl. She's my wife's foo-foo dog. Come on, baby girl. Let me finish. Early access again sparked the viral clips and created the polarization and the fighting online. So what are some of the key points? EA Sports has made no official commitment or comment rather, and is fueling speculation about the developer's intent. So the celebration, again, it's a Trump style fist pumps and sideways. It's part of 30 new animations that are reflecting real world athlete celebrations. And the dance mirrors and the moves used by NFL and college football players. And it's transcend sports. It's happened in soccer, even in golf. In every sport, they were doing the Trump dance. So this is more of a pop culture issue. And this is pop culture legitimacy. It is part of the pop culture landscape. It's not a political endorsement. You know, Trump's visibility at events like the Georgia-Alabama and his 2024 comments on NIL policy reform, it intersects with football. He's part of the culture. Now, the online reactions range from outrage to celebration, with some gamers demanding a political content and others defending the move as authentic Americana. And it is. I'm with the latter. Not because I wanted it in there, because it's part of the pop culture landscape. So screw you, you hateful bigots. And a lot of racists, too, out there with this. There are viral quotes like, it can't be. Is that what I think it is? Oh, yeah. That came up on X and YouTube, confirming the fan surprise and engagement. Yeah. So and I guess the celebration data shows that the animation is preset for certain players. It's not user selected. Man, I bet you if it was user selected, you see, it'd be all over the YouTube when people put in, you know, their videos up. So EA has previously included cultural dances and references in FIFA, UFC, and NBA. So this fits the pattern. And while this may stir discussion on political presence in digital environments, aka video games, especially when framed through sports, personality, and nostalgia, it's still creating uproar, despite the fact that all that's common. Outrage over a dance is absurd. The Trump dance has become a cultural staple used by real athletes, cheered by real fans. Criticizing its presence in sports game says more about the critic than the move. So who's really being political? Those angry at the dance aren't mad at the animations. They're mad at Trump. That's not gaming criticism. That's ideological intolerance, aka bigotry. Strip away the media spin and Trump's record speaks for itself. And yeah, I'm going to get political. That's why these critics shouldn't be there. And if you're a Trump hater, you're an idiot. Here's why. Trump passed the Future Act. He locked in $255 million yearly for minority-serving institutions, including historic levels for HBCUs. Launch and expanded opportunity zones. He's drawing over $100 billion in investments into underserved communities. He had the First Step Act, which freed hundreds, if not thousands, of inmates who did not deserve to be in prison, including a woman who is now his pardon czar, who was in jail for life for weed. She happened to be black. He's appointed one of the most diverse cabinet in both terms of Hispanics, blacks, gays. He has a Hispanic Secretary of State, female chief of staff, LGBTQ cabinet official who was steering this country economically, and Scott Bessent, who also beat up Elon Musk, allegedly. He spearheaded an economy where the working class wages, people like me or you, working class, not seen as white collar workers. Technically, I was, but you know what I mean. Where our pay rose faster than white collar income. His tariffs that all the bigots out there and the naysayers said was going to destroy the economy has led to new trade deals. It's reduced the trade deficit by billions and generated trillions in revenue projections, debunking the bigotry of doomsayers saying we are toast. The GOP isn't shrinking, it's growing. The party now boasts record minority representation. I'm Latino, I'm part of it. Broader ideological diversity and increasing support from black and Latino voters, especially working class men. Trump isn't ideological, he's results driven. And that's why the doomsayers keep missing. Whether it's foreign policy, economics, or social reform, his approach is simple. Does it work? And if he thinks it'll work, he'll try it. And there you have it, my friends. In today's episode, we explored how racial eugenic myths persist in sports families, media scrutiny amplifies identity divides in women basketball, the WNBA specifically, financial scandals expose gambling's dark underbelly, and altruism clashes with equity rules in high school athletics. Because let's be honest, Teddy Bridgewater wasn't trying to do bad. It just, he can't do what he did. And pop culture nods like Trump's dance highlight politics' inescapable grip on entertainment. So these stories remind us that sports aren't just games. They're battlegrounds for broader societal debates on race, fairness, and power. So before I go, don't forget to bookmark grumblingsmedia.com and follow us on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, eSpotify under the handle Grumblings Media. You can find not only my past podcast of Points on the Board, but I also did the same thing with culture, which entertainment, movies, music, and that's called The Red, White, and Rude, and my natural political talk, which is Fired Up and Fired Up California. You'll find those at grumblingsmedia.com and, again, YouTube, Rumble, Apple, eSpotify under the handle Grumbly's Media. Until next week, my friends, keep your heads on a swivel, because who knows where that big hit will come from. I'm William Del Pilar, and tune in next week for more Points on the Board.